Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know Employee Cycle, we're that people dashboard that's helping all of you HR leaders automate your HR reporting and analytics process. We know that today you're probably pulling a lot of messy spreadsheets from a lot of different HR systems. We know that that's manual, it's time consuming, it's painful, and you know that there has to be a better way. Well, look no further. That's why we built Employee Cycle, the people dashboard that has pre-built connections to all the most popular HR systems you're all using. Systems like Namely, Bamboo HR, ADP, TriNet, 15.5, Reflective, Office Vibe, you name it. All you have to do is connect your system so that we can pull all your people data into one place to view, track, share, and analyze in one unified view. Check out EmployeeCycle.com to learn more. We'd love to chat with you over a demo and show how we can help automate your HR reporting and analytics process. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today I would like to welcome a great guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Trav Wolkowski. He's the partner and CHRO at EmployeeMetrics. And today we're going to discuss why companies should adopt a nationalized compensation strategy. Trav, welcome to the podcast. Woo! Welcome, Trav!
Thanks. And let me just start by saying I'm a huge fan of Employee Cycle. I've been doing HR strategy and analytics for a while, and it's, as you say, a very manual process. You guys make it so easy and so great. So everyone listening, check them out.
Thanks for that shameless plug, Trav. It's always better. It's always better coming from others than myself. Thank you for that. So Trav, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Well, kind of accidentally. I think it's really funny because my career has been in strategy, and yet my career itself has been completely accidental. I was originally going to school for clinical psych, but I thought I didn't know if I could tolerate standing in an entire day listening to people's problems and not being able to give them solutions. And then I came across organizational psych, where I can listen to problems and then offer solutions. So that brought me into the world of HR. And, my goal is to put data to work and make employers the best they can be and the best places for their employees. And the only way you can do that is to be part of HR and their partner and have the data and then put it to use.
That's awesome. Thanks for that background. So, Trav, today we're discussing why companies should adopt a nationalized compensation strategy. This has been a very, very controversial and hot topic lately, especially on LinkedIn. I keep seeing people on both sides saying why this is a good and terrible idea. So because you've already started off with taking the position that this is a good idea and this is where the world and companies should move towards, can you give us a brief summary of why you believe that? And then we'll dig deeper into how this could potentially be put in place.
Yeah, so I completely understand why people are hesitant to move towards nationalized comp, and I understand why companies have historically used geo-based comp. It used to make sense. Now that we are in a fully virtual world, and even those companies that were completely against remote work pre-COVID didn't have a choice and have had to adopt and join us in the 21st century. Because of that, where an employee lives no longer matters. So paying somebody less because they don't live in a specific location makes no sense. I think it's also unfair. And companies want to attract top talent. You can't do that unless you're willing to pay for it. So if you're going to pay someone less based on where they live, or more based on where they live, you're only going to be able to attract talent that's willing to work within those confines. And then the final piece is that once people figure out that their comp is being based upon where they live, how long do you think it's going to be until they start telling you that they live somewhere else? highest comp in this country is in New York City and San Francisco. I have friends in both cities. I could very easily ask to use their address, and nobody would know if I'm there or where I really am in Wisconsin. So that, and also it's a little bit of an administrative nightmare, because now that people are moving so much and have, you know, had this exodus from cities, are you going to adjust their comp every single time they move? And how are you going to deal with reporting if, you know, when they tell you that they moved? And it's just too many moving pieces, and it's just not a smart strategy.
That's really interesting, and I want to dig a little deeper into some of the things you just said. The first thing I think is funny about people saying that they live somewhere that they really don't, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when people want their kids to go to a different school, they'll use a different address.
Right.
Say that they live there so that their kid can be in this better school district. So it's interesting to see that analogy and that parallel of how someone could use a different address, because quite frankly, it's just their mail. And maybe they don't really give a damn about the mail they get from their company, or that you don't get any mail from your company anyway.
Right. Or you could always give the company an address and then register a forward with the U.S. Postal Service, and the company would not know. So, you know, you're kind of putting people in a position where you're encouraging them to lie, which as an employer, I want radical transparency and truth. So I don't want to craft any strategies that encourage lying.
This is really interesting. So just the level set here, especially for the audience listening, what we're talking about are two schools of thought. The first is the legacy existing compensation best practice, where you look at what is the cost of living of where an employee is located, and then you base their salary off of that. And even if it's for the same role, so you have a engineer in San Francisco versus New York versus Denver versus Miami, they're all getting paid different rates based off of the cost of living of where they live. And then what Trav and a lot of other very forward-thinking people are advocating for is the ability to be able to pay everyone a flat rate. Am I right with that?
Yeah. So basing comp on, you know, job level, experience, tenure, skills mastery, and not location.
So I know that I had asked you this conversation before in a previous call that we had, and I'll ask it again for our audience. If you were to provide this flat rate, I'm trying to make sure I have my own thoughts clear here. If you're to provide this flat rate and assuming that you want to make sure that everyone, regardless of where they live in the country, has enough money to live and is getting paid the appropriate level based off of their tenure, their role, their experience, then in order to make that happen at a flat national rate, you would have to pay at the top of the market, regardless of where anyone lives, correct?
Yeah, I think as more and more companies move towards nationalized comp, it'll flatten a bit. But at the beginning, right now, yes, you're going to be paying closer to a San Francisco or New York market rate, just because those are the highest. But I do think it'll flatten a bit.
So let's just put some numbers behind that, so we can paint a clearer picture here. Let's say we're talking about the salary range for an entry-level engineer working at a tech company. I don't know these numbers offhand, so please no one don't quote me for this or fact-check me on this, but let's just say that the average engineer coming out of college working at a startup, a tech company in Silicon Valley or the San Francisco Bay Area is making $125,000. $150,000. Whereas where I'm located in Philly, let's just say the average salary for a developer, same level, skill set, even same school for that matter, might be making $78,000 to $90,000. You're saying and advocating that everyone should just pay the $150,000 for engineers, regardless of where they are, because then you wouldn't have to worry about varied comp based off of where people live. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the first argument that I'm sure a lot of people are thinking with this is the reason why they actually set up shop in a much more, let's call it, affordable area is so that they don't have to pay those high wages. And they also want to be able to potentially hire remotely, but from other places that has comparably low wages. So now, in essence, you are dramatically increasing the amount that any company will be paying for a role today that they'll have to pay for tomorrow. How do you justify that? Why would a company want to adopt that?
Well, I think it can be a bit of a slow ramp up. So if you're a small company and you're located near me in Wisconsin, you're only hiring people here in Wisconsin, then I think you can adopt a nationalized comp strategy, but not immediately jump to that high rate. You can move there as things level out. But if you're a large company, or even a small company, but you're hiring across the country, then it makes sense to me, because if you're only differentiating comp based on where somebody lives, how does that affect the company? You know, that if you're paying me more to live in New York City, that quote-unquote extra money would be going to my landlord or my parking, you know, whereas the quote-unquote extra that I'd be getting or be able to save by living here in Wisconsin where it's, you know, cheap, would go to me. But in either way, it's not going back to the company. So, to, you know, basically, if you're saying that we're only going to pay somebody based on where they live, then maybe people will move to those higher markets. And that's, of course, what we see. People have, you know, over the last, especially 20 years, as we've had the huge tech boom, have flocked to New York City and San Francisco. Now that we're sort of moving away from everyone having to be in-house, in the office, you know, and actually physically sitting in one location, then as a company, why do you care where I live? You know, and as an employer, I would prefer my people to live wherever they want, wherever they're going to be happiest and most productive. And if that means a little bit more of their comp is going into their pocket, cool. If that means they want to live somewhere expensive and they're spending a lot more on housing, cool. That's their business. But as an employer, I feel like I should be paying the same thing for the same role, regardless of location. It's kind of like, you know, when you think about the gender disparity in pay, you shouldn't be paying a woman less than you're paying a man for the same job. I kind of think location is the same thing. You know, there's no reason to consider a lower cost location to be lower in skill or lower in priority. They should be paid the same.
So let me ask this on the reverse side. For a company that is based in Philadelphia or a comparable place, maybe somewhere in New Jersey or somewhere down south, let's just call it Orlando, for that same engineering role, fresh out of school, you're paying, let's just call it $75,000. If you were to do it that way and say, you know what, we're going to base it off of the cost of living where we live, then in essence, you're not allowing that company to actually hire anyone in a different market, because the cost of living, regardless of how much you pay, still remains the same. So in essence, would this force companies to basically opt out or self-select out of hiring people outside of their markets? And is this something that might need to be put in place so that people hire more people from their backyard?
I actually think the opposite. I think if you're starting with a nationalized comp strategy, then you're sort of unchained from your physical office location. So you can now attract talent from higher priced markets because you're paying that competitive wage. So I think it actually opens the doors to better talent and better retention rather than, you know, holding it or making it less so.
But if I'm doing the math correctly, it only works if you actually are paying at the top of the market. But if you decide to pay at 50% of the market or the bottom of the market, then you're basically saying, I don't care if I get anybody to work for me in those higher price markets like New York, Boston, or San Francisco. If it basically it sounds like it's going to become a take it or leave it mentality. So if you want to work for us and you live in one of those markets and you think you could make it work off of this number that we're offering, then fine. But we're still going to base it off of the cost of living here. And now it's just a matter of whether you want to fit within this salary range or not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think that's how things are today anyway. Because if you're currently doing geo-based comp and you're hiring somebody from a different market, they already have to take it or leave it. So I don't think that changes.
Got it. So for a company that's thinking about doing this, how should they go about figuring out what does this strategy look like for them?
Well, you know, comp is really complicated. That's why I think it's so fun. I think you have to start off by having a good job architecture, having leveling in place, and have a matrix in place. The matrix that I always design has three basic elements. It's job level, experience or tenure, and skills mastery. The job levels are P1 through P7. That's professional, but you can use, you know, any letter you want or just say 1 through 7. I am also on the train that says unified job levels. So it's a P1 through P7 no matter what, not differentiated based on individual contributor, manager, or executive. So P1 through P7, skills mastery, novice, intermediate, advanced, expert. And then there's some experience or tenure buckets. Once you have that sort of format set up, then you can start looking at what are the national rates for P1 novice and P1 intermediate, P1 advanced, P1 expert. And then you can build ranges where you can say, okay, I've got this new rec posting. You know, let's say it's an engineer, a P3. We want somebody fresh out of college. So we're going to say that would be a novice. And fresh out of college, they've got 0 years of experience, 0 tenure. That would put them at the, you know, low range of the P3 range because they're P3, 0, novice. I hope that makes sense, but it's super complicated. But basically, you figure out generalized comp for job tiers, job levels, whatever you want to call it. And then that way you have a structure in place to base things off of. So you're not saying every single role we're paying the exact same rate. You're paying the nationalized rate for that role, for the appropriate skill level, and for the appropriate level of experience. So there still will be differentiation between people. It's just removing the location-based piece.
Got it. And then last question, Trav. What are some of the potential pitfalls or blind spots that a company might have when they're trying to innovate on their comp strategy for this nationalized compensation strategy?
Well, I think, you know, there's going to be continued hesitation because I know the first thing that people think of is, oh, this is going to cost too much money. But I think HR strategy is what becomes your employee experience. If you are paying well, you will be able to attract top talent, retain top talent, and have a more engaged culture, more inclusive culture, more diverse culture, and you will have returns on investment on the back end of that because your people will be engaged and they're going to stay. They're not going to, you know, jump from job to job looking for a higher rate and then take all of that institutional knowledge with them. If you're paying good national rates, competitive rates, then the only reason people would leave would be something else, which makes it easier to find out what that problem is, if there is one. But I know that, you know, people are going to immediately think, oh, nope, can't do that because it's going to cost too much. Well, it will, but it won't. It'll pay for itself. And, you know, having the right strategy is the difference between a top company and a bottom company. You know, especially if you're a startup, you need to have really, really smart people in your seats or you're going to fail. So I know startups, you know, are strapped for cash, but you can't expect to have the best of breed but not pay for them.
Got it. Trev, thank you so much for putting a spotlight on such an interesting and controversial topic. I know for this interview, it was less about talking about what's going to happen and more talking about on the surface how this could work if more companies started to implement this. And so starting to have the conversation is always the first place to figuring out whether something should happen or not. So really appreciate you doing this. And this is such a technical conversation as well. Really appreciate you running through some of the numbers and examples that you shared. So thanks so much for being such an awesome guest on our podcast.
Woo! Trev! Thanks so much for having me, Bruce.
Awesome. So where can people find you and EmployMetrics online?
So we're pretty much everywhere at EmployMetrics.com, at EmployMetrics on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, although there's no videos yet, but they're coming. And you know, you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn directly, TJWilkowski.com. And if you're looking for help with your HR strategy, including comp, engagement, equity, diversity, anything, we're here to help.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include all of that info in the show notes. So for everyone out there, if you enjoyed listening to this interview as much as Trav and I did making it, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and hungry for more like it, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast platforms. And last but not least, all of you super awesome HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.